The trees have always had some idea of what happens to them when they die. In the forest, they saw their neighbours toppled by winds or age and rot into the earth. And their roots sent up descriptions of peat and coal in vast beds and seams. Later, when humans came along, trees saw the stockades and the carts pulled by the horses, the chairs and the tables set out in gardens, and quickly put two and two together. Trees growing beside rivers saw themselves in the hulls and the masts of boats. And trees in orchids understood that the ladders propped against them had once been trees. And when men approached with axes to fell them, the trees recognised the handles. Trees often wondered what their particular fate might be. Could they subside into the long sleep of coal or blaze on for hours in a cottage grate? Or find themselves reconfigured as a handle, a hurdle, a post, a shaft, a stake, a joist, a beam, or something more elaborate and rare, an abacus, a chest piece, a harpsichord. And out of these dreams, a rumour moved along the trees of worlds like the wind, not quite understood at first. It was so strange. A rumour that when they died, instead of being burnt, planed, planked, shimmered, sharpened, many trees would be pulped. This was an entirely new idea to trees, whose self-image was all to do with trunk, sturdiness, backbone and form. But trees are good at getting the hang of things, and soon they understood that, from pulp, would come the white leaves that humans called paper. And that these leaves would be bound into a book. And after a short season of anxiety, in which conifers shed uncharacteristic quantities of needles, the trees came to terms with this new possibility in the range of their afterlives. Yes. Trees recognise themselves in paper, in books, just as they recognise themselves in all other things that hadn't been thought of quite yet. Bedsteads and bagpipes and bonfires, not to mention violins, cricket bats, toothpicks, clothes pegs, chopsticks and misery cords. Men and women would sit in the shade of trees reading books and the trees, dreaming of all that was to come, saw that they were the books as well as the chairs the men and women sat in. And the combs in the woman's hair and the shiny handles of the muskets and the hoops that the children chased across the lawns. The trees took pride in the idea of being a book. They thought a book was a noble thing to become. If you had to become anything. A terrible bore to be a rafter after all, and a wheel would mean such battering through the course of the travel, though of course the travel was a bonus. And what tree in its right mind would wish to be a rack, a coffin, a crucifix, gallows? One tree was more excited than the rest, and that tree was ash. The ash had such an inviting, feathery shade, and when men and women first had books to take into the shades of trees, they often chose the shade of an ash. The ash would look down at these people reading and see that they were discovering new regions inside themselves. And notice how, when they stood up and left the jurisdiction of its branches, they had changed, as if buds inside them were coming into leaf. And the ash saw that this change was a property of the marks on the paper, and that the paper was the only leaf with words on it. Soon, Ash trees were discussing this phenomenon all over the place, whispering about books in Poland and the Pennines, passing information from grove to grove until ash trees across North America and the eastern and the western Paleolithic. Until the ash trees across North America and the eastern lands were sighing and swaying with the thoughts of words and pens and poems and printing presses and Odysseus and the Song of Songs. So ash trees dreamed of becoming books themselves one day, even though they would be much in demand as firewood and prized as material for oars, hockey sticks and the chassis frames of Morgan motorcars. Sometimes, dreaming ahead, they saw men and women sitting beneath them writing in notebooks and diaries, writing letters of love and consolations, writing stories. And the ash tree wanted to be that too. Not just the book, but the writing in it, the words that carried the worlds. They saw the men and women holding their pens and the ink that came out of them onto the paper. And although they didn't have hands, they tried to curl their branches into fingers that might hold pens, and they dreamed it so vividly that the tips of their fingers turned black with ink as they waved against the black and white page of the sky, trying to write on it. Look closely. The ash tree has black buds, and the branches bend upwards at their tips towards the whiteness. And that story is called Why the Ash Has Black Buds by William Fens. And it is from a book called Why Willows Weep, which is a Woodland Trust book that I've had for quite some years. This particular story I've reread quite a few times because I absolutely adore it. I think it's so lovely to think of a tree observing us. And a lot of the stories in this book are of that stance. But this particular story, I love that it is trees observing humans and being inspired by us rather than threatened by us. And as a witch, I just love the idea of this. Gives me hope for humankind and our future relationship with trees and the folklore of trees, of which there is an astounding amount. So much that I'm thinking I might start doing a little series on Patreon inspired by the Ogham. It's Ohan, isn't it? It's a silent G. Remember that, Swales. Tree Oracle, which is, I think, one of the oldest ways of divining throughout human history. So it is big. And using it to choose a tree to research from picking out of the bag, finding out all about it and helping me then to help me learn the system of the divination. Oh yeah, that sounds so good. Today I was out and about noticing the trees in full bloom, the gorgeous cherry blossoms, they're so vibrant pink and white. The smell wonderful and they really inspire me. And the older I get, the more I notice trees and the more I want to be with them and touch them and pay attention to them. And I keep getting these little nods from the universe asking me to work more with the trees. And they are life and death. The carbon dioxide we breathe out, they breathe in. And then they breathe out oxygen, which we breathe in. So they are the lungs of Gaia. And I'm so confused when people choose to get them removed. I mean, I see so many tree surgeons around my neighbourhood. Tree surgeons, what a name. It makes it sound like, you know, specialist doctors that are going to help the tree. Nope. I mean, there were a gorgeous blossom on our street that has been cut down because of the position it was in. was in front of a window, so I guess it was dark in the house, but me and my girls were so sad when they cut it down because it was so vibrant every spring. And we used to collect the petals and throw them around and play in it and stuff. So I mourned that tree when it got felled. And it's new owners that have just moved in. Like, they knew the tree were there before they moved in. The tree were there long before. Anyway, I'm going to have to let that one go. I'm not going to win that one. Heartbreaking. Trees used to be so important to early man for shade and to begin making very early tools. How to create fire by rubbing two sticks together. In Georgian and Victorian times, when people bought land, they'd often plant a tree as a form of insurance. And that was a little bit based in folklore, the fact that there'd be a tree standing firm and healthy on the land and would grow with the family for future generations. And so to have no trees on your land would be considered quite questionable and even perhaps considered a bad omen back then. It would make people lift an eyebrow and question, like, where's your tree? So many notable trees in witchcraft. You've got the world tree and the life tree, which are huge in the Calabar.
The what?
Kabbalah. I had to proper dig that out of my head. In Norse mythology, Yggdrasil, I think it is the enormous ash tree that holds the whole cosmos together. Its snow-tipped canopy rises above the clouds and its roots burrow deep into the underworld. And dryads are forest nymphs in Greek mythology, which is bound in spirit to a tree in the forest from which they rarely stray from. The bond is so strong that if the tree dies, so does its dryad.
Oh, that's sad.
Let's have a look at a bit of folklore. I've got some of this from thewoodlandtrust.org.uk. The ash tree is known as a healing tree, and some magic rituals would take place where naked children were passed through the split trunk of an ash tree as a cure for broken or weak limbs. It was said that if the parts stayed together, the child was cured, but if the gap remained, the ritual would not be effective. Then there's the beautiful blackthorn. In Celtic mythology, it was considered to be the home of fairies. And anyone carrying a walking stick made from blackthorn wood was suspected of being a witch at one time. A blackthorn staff was thought to be an effective stick for warding off evil spirits and used by witches to repel people that had dark agendas against them. The beautiful elder. The folklore surrounding the elder is massive and conflicting. It is thought that if you burn elder wood, you would see the devil. Or you planted one by your house, it would keep the devil at bay. Apparently, it could charm away warts and vermin. And I think there's something I know about elder is you never cut it. I think historically, witches believed it shouldn't be cut down. But there is this really cool craft method. When it dries, it creates these really cool beads. You can push the middle out and it creates like a natural bead that you can put on string and paint. I think one of my awesome foraging friends taught my kiddies this. In Denmark, the elder was associated with magic as well. A dryad called it the elder tree mother, and she was supposed to live in its branches. If you wanted to cut the tree to make furniture from its wood, the elder tree mother must be asked permission first. And if you didn't, you ran the risk that she'd follow you and haunt you forever. So it's worth asking. The English oak, beautiful, has a long and fruitful folklore history. It is so sacred to many people, including ancient Greeks, Norse and Celts. It is associated with the god of thunder and may have come from the phenomenon that oaks are often split by lightning, being the tallest tree standing in the landscape. More recently, oak was the sacred wood burnt by the Druids for their midsummer sacrifice. In fact, the actual word means oak man. The hawthorn is powerful and supernatural for good and evil and has been associated with sacrifice and protection. It is the only British plant to be named after the month in which it flowers. The appearance of its blooms was heralded at the end of winter and the beginning of summer, saying, "Near cast clout till May is out." And this almost certainly refers to the opening of flowers and not the end of the month. Some people think that our ancestors used a maypole made of hawthorn. And the rhyme, "Here we go gathering nuts in May," referred to the collection of knots, not in fact nuts, in many of the blossoms. Rowan. I have rowan berries on my microphone for luck and protection. One of its names is witchwood, and its Celtic name is Fidna Nandrad, which means the wizard's tree. That's pretty cool. In Ireland, it was planted near houses to protect against the evil spirits, especially ones of the dead. In Wales, the rowan trees were often planted in churchyards. And in Scotland, there was a strong taboo against cutting the rowan tree down. The wood is the most protective part, used for stirring milk to prevent it curdling, and as a pocket charm against wrongdoings. Its beautiful red berries are thought to be the best for fighting evil off. There was an ancient practice of hanging sprigs of rowan above doors and stables to keep those evil spirits away. An old German folk tale says that if you carry a leaf or a bit of wood from the rowan tree, it will protect you always from harm. And of course, there's the Holly King and the Oak King, which Wiccans use to emphasise the balance of the year in darkness and light, as the kings are brothers of the trees, and each year on Yule and Midsummer, they have a battle to swap over, which I've covered in the Christmas episode, a recent Christmas episode. And that episode also begins with a beautiful folklore story from my own little Bonts. Speaking of Christmas, I guess most people only really have a regular relationship with a specific tree, the Christmas tree, especially when you go pick one and bring it in, just as our ancestors used to do hundreds of years ago in Yule time, when we'd get a massive log and burn it through the hearth. Maybe that is as tree-y as a lot of mainstream people get whilst decorating the tree and feeling festive, which does make me a little bit sad because it's the tip of the iceberg. But at least it's a tree, and there is one tree a year. I do often see trees that are decorated in pieces of cloth where people have made a wish, the ritual of wish treeing when there's a sad time or somebody's lost somebody on the road, an accident. Often things of memory are left at the foot of trees as an act of love, leaving offerings in trees, feeding the birds, also receiving gifts from trees. I know it's spring right now, and I am very much aware of the trees waking up and the gorgeous blooms and the new green leaves that are popping out, and the gorgeous soft pussy willow that I spoke about on a recent episode. In autumn, the trees give us gifts in the form of conkers and acorns and the sycamore seed pods, which are like little helicopters. When you throw up, they come down in a beautiful spiral. There's something so nurturing about being around a tree, and reassuring that trees are alive and can live through a lot. Like the story, they've seen our history and they've observed our evolution as a human race, and we can have a better relationship with them if we give them time and attention, notice them and be around them. And even when I was pregnant and doing hypnobirthing preparations for my second born, Clementine, doing a meditation where we had to visualize ourselves as a big, beautiful tree. Mine was an oak tree, and a really strong, massive grounded tree, and every contraction that came, imagine that it was a storm, like bowing the branches of the tree, and they'd never snap, they'd just bend and shake in the pain, which was the storm. But because your tree was grounded, it worked really well for me. And reflecting on trees in my life, I have a lot of big moments where there is a tree in my memory that was present. Being bullied, I remember running away from nasty kids as a kid myself. to a willow tree and hiding in it. I remember being in the playground, playing with the trees, getting in trouble because I tied a kid's dress to a tree, pretending I'd captured them, and then they couldn't get it undone, so they had to cut the dress. Oh, I was so in trouble. Shall we have some tree facts? This is taken from a Cauldron of Woo episode over on my Patreon. Did you know that the fresh smell of pine is actually chemically released to warn other trees that it's been attacked by insects and to attract the predators to deter the bugs? Ooh, I love the smell of pine. Trees are connected through a massive fungal network called mycelium, which is how the plant life, such as the mushrooms and the trees, all speak to each other. It's like a big network underground, the wood wide web. And that helps them share nutrients and send chemical signals to each other, telling each other about the earth and the winds and the weather and the birds and who knows what else they speak in their beautiful woodland language. Did you know that a mother tree recognises her own offsprings and sends them extra nutrients through the root system, meaning they're literally feeding their children rather than feeding the stranger trees that may be nearby in the forest? When a tree gets attacked by insects, it sends warning signals through these fungal networks so neighbouring trees can produce defensive chemicals. I quite like that. So even in the tree world, they're looking out for each other. There is no competition. They want to see each other win. Bloody love that. A dying tree dumps their remaining nutrients into the network and the soil, leaving an inheritance for the younger trees before them. The older trees help the younger trees. And trees can sabotage rivals by sending toxic chemicals through the roots, poisoning competitors that steal the sunlight and resources in a silent underground chemical war. Oh, bother. No, there's ants on trees, isn't there, that eat the sap? Or do they take the sap to their little anti nests in exchange for killing other bugs on the trees? So it's kind of like they help each other out. I know my cherry tree in the yard has ants all over it every summer, which I don't interfere with because I know they're doing something. And I always see the little bits of sap on my cherry tree. And I know that these little anties are like my cherry tree's army, and they're killing off like the green fly and stuff that destroy the tree's system and leaves. And all the little anties do is just have this gorgeous nectar that the tree provides. Oh, isn't that nice? I realise I probably confused you a bit because I'm saying anties like little anties, not anties like your mum's sister. Aspen trees are well known for their ability to clone themselves through their root system. One tree in Utah has 47,000 clonal trunks and is estimated to be about 80,000 years old because it manages to clone itself. Wild! The biggest tree I ever saw was in Ecuador in 2011 when we were going through the jungle. And the tour guide were like getting us to eat bugs and all that questionable stuff. There were this tree and it was absolutely enormous. The trunk was as big as my house, like width-wise. I'd never seen a tree like it and that'll always stick in my mind. I can't even remember how tall it was, you know, because the rainforest is so dense. When you look up, you just see green. But I was flabbergasted at this massive, massive, massive tree. Amazing. Trees absolutely have consciousness, don't they? I know I got sucked in by that viral trend on TikTok maybe a year or two ago where somebody stands with the tree near the leaves going, "Can you just touch my shoulder? Can you just touch my shoulder?" And eventually the tree touches their shoulder Now, is it just somebody hiding off camera that's wiggling the branch, or is the tree actively responding, slowly but surely touching their shoulder? The witch in me wants to believe it's the tree. But my sceptic, realistic brain says it's fake news. Gutted. If you've tried it, let me know. Let me know what happened. This is an interesting fact I found recently whilst walking through a park. In the UK, there is masses of grey squirrels, which are an absolute nuisance, to be fair. They're really quite bullish and nasty to the red squirrel, which is now endangered in the UK. But also the way they eat the bark off the tree, instead of doing what the red squirrel does, where it eats a gorgeous, neat square of bark randomly on the tree, the grey squirrel will go around the branch in a circle, so there's a whole circular piece of the branch showing. So it resembles like how a sleeve would be on your arm, and the tree then sheds that arm. So that's why when you walk around the parks, you see Disney-like circles on the bark. They look awesome, but it is actually where the tree has forfeited its arm to prevent bacteria injuring it or disease that will ultimately kill the tree off. In the unlikely event that you find yourself able and willing to catch a great squirrel, apparently you're not allowed to re-release it because they're a pain in the ass. So don't catch one because it'll be your problem forever. No, don't attempt to catch one anyway because nature, but I just thought that was quite an interesting fact. So this was a spontaneous episode as the becoming, because I just have moments where I'm like, I've got to talk about this right now. And every evening I find myself neglecting my husband after the kids have been put to bed and podcasting like a witch possessed. I guess the point of this episode is to invite you to go out there and connect with a tree, or inviting a tree into your practice, looking up certain trees, what they represent, what the correspondences are. If you are drawn to a certain tree, there'll be a good reason. It's like divining with trees. Feel the bark and see if you get anything. Meditate with them. Have a conversation with a tree. Ask it a question and see if you get an answer. Like the story at the beginning of this episode, what would the tree think of you if the tree was viewing you, or if the tree was observing daily life around you, the neighbours, the people on your street, regular people or your family or yourself? Perhaps the next time you hold a circle or a coven, if you do that kind of thing, or even a gathering, a local gathering, choose to share it with a tree. Go to a park, pick a tree and invite the tree into the circle. I bloody love that idea. Imagine what the tree could provide us in that setting, sharing knowledge from its roots, from deep down below the earth. Oh, I think as somebody who journals and meditates frequently, this action and invitation to trees is really powerful and definitely impacts your spirituality. Do you have a tree that you go to that you like to sit underneath? When you meditate, is there a tree that you go to? When I meditate, there is certain trees that always spring up, usually from my past. The willow I mentioned earlier on comes to me in meditations quite frequently. There's also the octopus tree up in Northumberland in Belsay Gardens, and it is such a beautiful tree and I'm always drawn to it when I visit. And during the weekend when I was covering the Alternative Healing Festival, our recent podcast guest, Catherine of Orange Blossom Oldways, finished Saturday with a beautiful journeying circle with a drum where we actually visited a dream, and mine was quite deep. I found myself in a cave trying to escape by scaling the walls, and this octopus tree was at the top of the cave. Its long arms helped me out. It's like I have a feeling that trees want to be of assistance to us if we just give them time and respect and value. I still think about when the sycamore tree got cut down, you know, the sycamore gap tree. I was never lucky enough to visit it, but I knew it well from film and media and mythology and witches talking about it. And the fact that two people were so lost decided to come and cut it down just for shits and giggles, like, that really bothers me. It was 3 years ago. I was doing my training for SIA, which isn't important, but I was so moved that I did a little podcast episode about it, because I know that so many fellow pagans and witches would have been devastated by this thoughtless, aggressive action. It was just so unnecessary, and it will take a long time to recover from it. Anyway, let's focus on the trees we are lucky to have right now in this moment. It's time for me to wrap up. I hope you have enjoyed this episode. A thoughtful, solitary witch episode with a magical view to encourage and enlighten and inspire you regarding trees around you, in your backyard, in your neighbourhood. Get your feet on the grass, connect to Mother Gaia, and she will assist and inspire your spirituality and witchcraft and magic. Let me know if you have a tree. Take a picture, tag me in it, I'd love to see. Stay magical, witches, and thank you for listening.